Chicago Sports Conversation is now.
The Cubs.
What happened?
Have picked up left-handed pitcher Jose Quintana from the White Sox.
What?
There's two Reddit users, WetBud23 and Katy Perry's Booty Hole, who first discussed the trade.
The Beat.
The baseball logic of this trade just made so much sense.
It's been very positive. There's a good feel in the front office, good feeling throughout the fan base, from at least what I've heard.
On 720 WGN.
Yeah. It was a historic moment in Chicago sports history. Good afternoon. I'm Mark Harmon. He is Harry Tynowitz with you till 7. The Chicago Cubs have started out the second half red hot, up 8-0, and then nearly blowing a game last night. I was going to jump off a building if they had lost that game. They did not. They beat the Orioles 9-8. Jake Arrieta starts tonight. Jose Quintana will make his Cubs debut tomorrow. Eloy Jimenez, Dylan Cease, and the other two are doing good things for the White Sox. Everyone's happy, Harry Tynowitz.
It's a trade. That's what a trade's supposed to be, is both team wins. The whole city wins. You know, this is great for the Cubs, obviously, because their weakest spot was the starting rotation. And it's great for the White Sox, because what they're doing is they're bending over backwards to get the best team possible around 2020. And I'm telling you, Rick Hahn took the White Sox from being one of the worst minor league organizations to being one of the best. And you know, I've said it before, Theo Epstein is King Arthur. You know, he's the guy that drew the sword from the stone. But Rick Hahn is looking awfully handsome here, because three trades have just taken that Sox minor league system from, like, worst to first.
White Sox have seven in the top 100 prospects. Yoan Moncada started the season ranked number one, who they got in the Chris Sale deal. He is still number one. Eloy Jimenez, who they just got from the Cubs, started the year ranked 11th. He is now fifth. Michael Kopech, who the White Sox got in the, is that in the Sale deal or the Eaton deal? I get confused here. There's been so many deals. Kopech came in the Red Sox trade with Sale.
But he's the guy that throws 110 miles an hour if you give him a running start.
Right. He started the year ranked 24. Now he's 20.
And he's at Double-A.
He's at Double-A. Luis Robert is not ranked right. Was not ranked at the start of the year. He's ranked, now he's ranked 45th.
Yeah, he's looking pretty good.
So that was, and then they got Ronaldo Lopez, who they got in, Lopez came in the Eaton deal.
Nationals.
Right. He started the year at 23. He's now at 59, so trending the wrong way.
And Giolito?
Giolito was 40. He's now 75. And Dylan Cease, who the Cubs gave up for him, started the year at 90. And now he's at 83.
So let me ask you a question. You're I know you love the Cubs.
Hope that wasn't too many numbers. The point is, the White Sox have seven players in the top 100. That's really, really good. That tends to turn out well for teams.
And they did it by only moving three guys. They moved three guys to get those, you know, to get those seven players. And then there's extra stuff. Who knows what these extra, you know, infielders will be that they can't come in the Cubs trade. So if you're a Sox fan, do you care if Chris Sale wins the Cy Young and the Red Sox win the World Series?
No, but I think that's an interesting question, because I do think, now if you're, I don't care about Chris Sale winning the Cy Young. Mm-hmm. I'd probably be rooting for him if I was a diehard Sox fan on some level, even though he ripped jerseys and acted infantile at times.
Yeah,
and wasn't,
he had a moment.
Right, we all have our moments in life, right? That wouldn't bother me. However, and I'm curious, Sox fans, 312-981-7200, if Jose Quintana's on the mound and the Cubs win another World Series this year, I don't think they feel as good about the trade. Maybe, and it shouldn't matter, because you're not winning it this year anyway, so what's the difference? But there is still a rivalry with the Cubs and White Sox, and you don't want the Cubs to win the World Series, period.
When you were at one of your 72 weddings a couple months ago, as is your nature, you go to everyone's wedding but your own.
Got invited to three weddings this year. I had never been invited to a wedding before in my life.
You sit on the bride's side every time.
Yeah, I do.
Sam Panianovich was here. Sam Pan, as I like to call him. He said that the Sox would never, you know, move Quintana to the Cubs.
So many people said that.
I agree. I'm not singling Sam out. I'm just saying that is a narrative that White Sox fans have said, screw the Cubs. And, you know, they didn't like Sammy Sosa. They thought Sosa was overrated. They were thrilled to hear that he was on something. But it doesn't matter if you're a Sox fan. If Quintana, you know, pulls a Sutcliffe and goes 16-1, if Chris Sale wins the Cy Young and the Red Sox win the World Series. It doesn't matter because you have gotten so much better than you were, and the White Sox are going to be formidable.
Well, okay, intellectually, I agree with you.
It's not hard to agree with me.
Sometimes it is for me, Harry. You're up there. You live in a very hoity-toity land over there. So, I mean, you got that KU education.
Yeah, baby, rock chalk.
There you go. So, but I think emotionally, listen, the Cubs are in the playoffs. Jose Quintana's on the mound. I am rooting incredibly hard against him if I'm a Sox fan. I think if I'm a diehard Sox fan, of course you are. Now, you're asking for people to be rational and intelligent. Right. When Eloy Jimenez comes up and plays for the White Sox,
right?
I don't think I'm going to be... I'm trying to be a more mature person here, Harry, but I don't think I'm going to be sitting there as a Cub fan saying, I hope he has a phenomenal career. That would be rude to Eloy and all, but I don't see myself being like, go Jimenez. I would like to feel like the Cubs did well here, and he didn't end up in the Hall of Fame. Now, if the Cubs win a World Series, it really doesn't matter. But even then, 15 years of this guy mashing baseballs, they compare him to Giancarlo Stanton, who's one of the best young players in the game. That'll hurt a little bit. It just will.
You think it could have a Jordan effect. You know, when Michael won the 6 titles here, and all these people named their kids Michael or Jordan, and a lot of girls were named Jordan. Wouldn't it be cool if, like, you know, babies born in 2021 are all named Eloy?
Oh, sure. Great. And on the other side, listen, if it works out
yes.
that the Cubs win the World Series and then in 2020 or 2021 or whatever it's going to be, that Eloy Jimenez hits a bomb in Game 7 and the White Sox take the whole thing and the city actually got 2 World Series out of this, I'd make that trade right now.
This trade is great for both teams. Let's talk about the Cubs, okay? This trade is great for the Cubs because their worst, as bad as they've been playing defensively, and as poor as they have been with RISP, runners in scoring position, and Chris Bryant is the worst among, you know, bad Cubs hitters with runners in scoring position, you have a sense that they're going to play better defensively. You have a sense that they're going to start hitting the ball like they did last night. But the starting pitching is where your confidence is wavering. And they went out and got Jose Quintana, who not only will bring a lot to the party this year, and that's what I care about, is I want the back-to-back championships. But he is under contract for the next 3 years.
Right. I think the Cubs would have made this deal if they were 15 games out of first place. They need pitching. I wouldn't completely rule out that they sign Arrieta like everyone is. I'm not going to bet on it, but I wouldn't completely rule it out. But they need pitching. And you're getting a guy who's 28 years old, who has one of the best contracts in baseball, which that's another point where the White Sox deserve an incredible amount of credit, is not just the fact that they found Quintana off the scrap heap and developed him, not just the fact that they did the same thing with drafting Chris Sale, although he was a first-round pick, but he did fall further than he should have. Chris Sale from, what is it,
Florida?
Gulf Coast.
Right, yes.
Right.
Congratulations, Mark Carmen.
Right. So they deserve all that credit in finding these guys, but they also signed them to incredibly team-friendly deals, which upped their value in the trade market, and it definitely helped them in their return.
Well, here's
wasn't the plan. They were hoping to build around him, but that certainly worked out nice for him.
Here's my question.
Is Adam Hogan?
Any hoagies?
Yes. Go.
Any hoagies?
I don't know. Maybe there is a hoagie. Adam Hoag is calling in the show, which is very rare that he would call in on his off day. I mean, he must be either A, angry, or B, want to defend the White Sox, or C, something undetermined. What's up, Adam Hoag? Welcome to your show, 720 WGN. How are you, sir?
Kind of all of the above, Carm. Here's my hoagie for you guys. Carm, yeah. Any White Sox fan who roots against Jose Quintana, first of all, I don't think that person exists.
Oh, you're wrong. Go ahead.
No, because here's why. Jose Quintana, it was painful the last, 6 years that he's been pitching on the South Side to watch the lack of run support, to watch both for Sale and Quintana, two guys that should have been pitching game one and game two of a playoff series and never got the opportunity. So for somebody as good of a player, teammate, person as Jose Quintana, I don't care what team he's on, including the Cubs, I cannot wait to see him pitch in the postseason. I will definitely be rooting for Jose Quintana. in the postseason. I mean, if you're that, I know there's White Sox fans that hate the Cubs, and that's fine. That's part of the rivalry. But, you know, you could root against the Cubs in all the other games. But when Quintana takes the hill, you're rooting for Jose Quintana if you're a White Sox fan, because he was that good of a player for the White Sox and that good of a teammate, and I can't wait to see him in the postseason.
Agree or disagree, 312-981-7200. Go ahead, Harry.
So it's October, and you are at a bar, and you are watching the Cubs playing Boston in the World Series, and you're rooting for the Cubs because Jose Quintana is on the mound.
Like, he's representing you as a White Sox fan? Is that what you're saying?
No, he appreciates what he did for the team, and he never made the playoffs. And Hogue is absolutely right. They never scored for him. I was in a Sox game once where Quintana pitched. They got half a run.
He had the worst run support in all of baseball from 2012 to 2017. That's the White Sox didn't support him. But I don't think that matters, Adam Hogue. I think that Sox fans who hate the Cubs, and I would say that's most Sox fans, they're not going to be rooting for him. Maybe you're right, but I'd be shocked.
Well, how about this interesting scenario? What if Quintana is pitching against Sale in the World Series? That'd be pretty sweet.
How cool would that be?
Then maybe you're rooting for Sale over Quintana. I don't know. But also, I think isn't it 9 out of 9 prospects in the top 68? I don't think you were giving the White Sox enough credit there.
My list came from Jay Jaffe off of Sports Illustrated. If you want to dispute Jaffe, I can do a Google search. Top 100 prospects in baseball. We can do this.
Hey, you know, Adam, Rick Hahn's not done. I think he's got to move David Robertson like right away, and I think he's going to move Todd Frazier if he can.
Yeah, I don't know that Frazier's going to get you anything more than maybe a single A guy. But Robertson, I would think, I mean, look, part of what we learned here with this Quintana trade is that the price of pitching, especially starting pitching, is very high. And certainly a guy like Quintana with that contract, that team-friendly contract, and you guys were just talking about that and you're spot on. We're kind of wondering about Tim Anderson, that contract that he signed in spring training. Remember, 6 years, and it's like almost nothing if he turns out to be good. And then the only way it looks bad is if he completely bombs out as a prospect, which I don't know what's going to happen. But, you know, the thing that I think White Sox fans need to remember, and this goes for, you know, the same thing with the Cubs, when they stockpiled all these prospects, not all these guys are going to be on the White Sox when they become good. You know, and that includes maybe a guy like Tim Anderson. Maybe Tim Anderson's contract, which is another one of these, you know, bargains, if he's any good, looks very attractive to him. And then you're able to move him for that. So you got to always kind of think big picture with all of these guys. You're absolutely right that they're not done. Hopefully Robertson brings in, you know, another pretty good prospect, since he is a pitcher and he can be that final piece. Just look what Chapman was able to, you know, the cost of what it took to get Chapman last year for the Cubs. I don't know that Robertson's going to command that, but he should hopefully get you something pretty good because he's having a great year.
Per MLB.com, Moncada is 1 for the White Sox, Eloy Jimenez 2, Michael Kopech 3, Luis Roberto Robert is 4, Giolito's 5, Ronaldo Lopez 6, Carson Fulmer 7, Dylan Cease 8, and Zach Collins 9, and Collins is ranked 68th. So according to, I guess there's different lists here. MLB.com does have them 9 in the top 100. Bottom line, they got a ton of talent, and they're going to be here in the next couple of years.
And they got it from just 3 trades. And how about the catch Tim Anderson made last night? That reminded me of me.
That was you, Harry.
Uh-huh.
You know what's funny, Harry? When I saw that play, you're the first person that popped in my head.
Right. And then did you notice that he took out a Hershey's Special Dark Bar and started eating it right there on the infield? I would have done that as well. You know, speaking of Aroldis Chapman, can either one of you guys answer this question?
Most blown saves in the majors, New York Yankees?
Right. Last night, he blew a lead in the bottom of the 9th, and he walked in the winning run. Benedetti walked in for the Red Sox. He drove in the winning run because he was walked. The last time a Red Sox walked to drive in a game-winning run against the Yankees, who was it?
The last time a Red Sox walked to drive in the game-winning run against the Yankees, who was it? Hogue? It's got to be a Cubs-Sox connection here.
It is 1956, a fellow named Ted Williams.
Well, thank you for saying that.
Okay.
How about that? Chapman is like historically bad this year.
Hashtag Harry Stats. There will be more all the way till 7. Breaking out the Ted Williams 1956 reference.
Absolutely. It's all Joe Maddon's fault, right?
Yeah. I didn't say that.
Adam Hogue, we got to go. Dan Long's looking at me with deep, dark eyes of disgust, if you will.
I think it's lust.
Sorry for hijacking the show. I love you guys. Have a good one. Carm, get me a Jose Quintana Cubs jersey.
Okay. We'll see you tomorrow at 3. Thank you.
All right. See you again.
That's unbelievable. Maybe I will. Just get you a Quintana Cubs jersey. 312-981-7200. White Sox fans, Cubs fans, are you rooting for these guys to do well on the other side of town? Or do you really have that level-headedness in your life, that type of mindset where you can actually do that? Tonight on WGN-TV, it's Abreu Cruz, Davidson, Cano. Aren't you glad you're not the one pitching? It's the White Sox and the Mariners. Tonight at 6 on WGN-TV Sports, 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Harry Tino has just pulled out a napkin out of his pocket that looks a little like yellow stained. And what do you got in there?
First of all, it's a paper towel. I got some of these delicious Sam's Club chocolate chip cookies, man. But you're an elitist. You don't do Sam's Club.
Well, what's underrated? I mean, who does that?
Dan Long enjoys them.
You leave your house, you grab a couple cookies, you go paper towel, wrap it, put it in your pocket, like to warm them up so they'll be soft?
No, I was going to grab a Three Musketeers bar and a Milky Way Dark. And then I thought, oh, man, we've got those cookies. And the candy bars, for you youngsters out there, the candy bars will, of course, last longer shelf life. So I went cookies.
Good point.
Right.
Long, you look like you're chomping at the bit on these cookies. Am I wrong?
I like how the cookie quality has become a kind of a recurring thing on the show. There's always cookies around here. And
I had a good cookie last night. Forget the brand. It was a good cookie. Really, I love cookies. I'll eat your cookie. Those look actually better than normal. Well, they look like they got a nice color. They look fresh. Good job. Hey, We got 2 seconds here. All right, here, coming up after 4:30, I want to get to the news on time.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of reasons, like within the prospects, I'm just trying to think about how Theo broke this down, what he's willing to give up. And I think there's some, like, perhaps these guys are a little bit overrated and they know it, and that's why he's willing to make the deal, even though
You think the two young kids are overrated? Jimenez is 20, but you think Jimenez and Cease are overrated, or the other two guys?
I'll read you a couple things here that I've done deep research on, which would make me nervous if I was a White Sox fan on what you're getting. Because prospects are only prospects until they're not prospects.
Well, prospects are actually suspects.
That prospects are suspect until they're not suspect, and they're not prospects, and they're actually real players.
That's right.
Deep thoughts right here on 720 WGN News in 2 minutes. WGN 436. Good afternoon. Hope you're having a great Saturday. Enjoying the summer, remember, doesn't last forever. Get out there, do it, enjoy. What have you done to enjoy the summer today, Harry?
Today, I spent 5 hours with my daughter and 7 kids from her Japanese class.
Wow.
They are trying to raise, the way that Evanston High School does the Japanese trip, instead of like one kid's parents writing a check for that kid, is the 20 kids have to create the 20 fees. Together.
I see.
So they had a big yard sale a couple weeks ago, and they had a yard sale again today. We had it at our house, which is a very, very fine house. And we were on the lawn today selling things, and yard sales are just tough.
You didn't do well?
Well, there's like people that come by. I mean, it was fun to be with my daughter. It was fun to see them, go after it.
What's the best thing you had for sale at the yard sale that's still available and somebody could purchase? And right now you're putting it out there on 720 WGN. I know people care about this. I believe people care about this.
Justin Grimm.
You have Justin Grimm for sale?
Mm-hmm.
How bad was Justin Grimm last night?
And just when I was sticking up for him yesterday, I'm like, hey, Justin Grimm's been pretty good.
Last night was tough. But they got through it.
We had a big mirror. And then one of the neighbors brought by a couch.
Okay.
We had a really nice couch.
Anything? Do they sell? Couch, mirror? No?
The mirror sold. The couch is hard to sell because you got to have someone that has the ability to take it away.
Right. What's the couch for sale for? I need a new couch.
Come on by. We'll make you a deal.
All right. I'll, So maybe we can work something out here. All right, to pay off my amazing tease before the news, here's what, here, you tell me if this would bother you as a White Sox fan of what you're getting back for Jose Quintana. Now, Eloy Jimenez is the top prospect here.
Oh, yeah.
Can hit the ball 7 million feet. He's got there's highlights of him hitting balls off light towers a la Roy Hobbs, the whole thing.
He took out a light tower. He's been very productive.
Okay. Now, does it matter to you if he can play all three outfield positions?
No.
Does it matter to you if he can play both corners?
I mean, it'd be nice if he could play two.
Right. Okay. Jimenez.
Because he's 20.
Right. Jimenez, per scouts, does not run well enough to be a center fielder or throw well enough to be a right fielder. So he is most decidedly a left fielder. So he could play one position.
Okay. That sounds, you know.
And he's a great hitter, and a left fielder who can hit bombs is a very worthy Major League Baseball player. But that does limit him, in my mind, at least a bit.
It softens
the blow a drop.
But that's your position. That's your position where you hide guys.
Defense is important.
I'm a huge advocate of good defense. But I go back to a guy that won World Series with the Phillies who played for the White Sox, the Bull, Greg Luzinski, who was so slow in the outfield that he had to stand on an angle for every pitch because he needed to get an extra break. And one time I was in the men's room, and he was at the urinal next to me. It was very uncomfortable.
That seems awkward.
But Schwarber, I mean, you hide your worst fielder in left field.
Right.
So
we've already got a Kyle Schwarber. I think Eloy Jimenez profiles to be a better player than Schwarber. Schwarber was never ranked the way Eloy Jimenez is being ranked right now.
He gets almost an RBI per game playing at single A South Bend.
I'm not saying he's not going to be great, but I'm just pointing out that he's only a left fielder. The Cubs have a lot of left fielders. Hopefully Schwarber will turn into a better left fielder than he's been, the whole thing. How about Dylan Cease? You want to hear what they say about Cease?
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, he's a Tommy John guy, which is why he dropped in the draft, okay? So he's already had elbow surgery. Now, Tommy John surgery is routine, and guys come back from it all the time. But they write, his changeup and control both need improvement. Without those, he could wind up as a late-game reliever instead of a starter. So he's got a fastball and he's got a curveball, but he doesn't have right now, he doesn't necessarily profile to be a starter unless his changeup and his control get better. Now, those are significant issues to me, especially for the guy who had elbow surgery, and he's on a very short leash here. They don't let him go further than five innings right now because they're trying to keep him healthy.
But this, we live in a Major League Baseball, you know, their draft is 97,000 rounds. There are guys picked in the 42nd round who make it to the bigs, and guys that get picked in the first round don't.
Relevance?
Relevance is that Dylan Cease is very young, and if he becomes a closer, Wade Davis wasn't successful as a starter. As a closer, he's spectacular.
Right, but the White Sox are hoping that he's going to be a starter, you would think.
Yeah. But, I mean, the Sox are loaded with starting pitching right now, and obviously they want Cease to be a closer, but I'm saying the relevance is that one scout's opinion could easily change between the time a guy is, you know, pitching in the minors and by the time he shows up at Guaranteed Rate Field.
Fair enough. It's only one scout's opinion. I agree there. Brian Fleety.
Yes.
All right. He's in single A. You know how old he is?
He's 60.
He's 24 years old, which is old for single A, right?
Right.
This is a guy that was signed out of Venezuela at age 19, 2012. He's only made it up the food chain to single A. That's not exactly impressive. He's played more second base than shortstop. Decent all fields, line drive approach. That doesn't sound like a guy that's going to turn out to be much, does it?
You don't know. Hey, Wilson Contreras. Wilson Contreras was in the minors, and he was average. He was below average. He was too old to be in the minors, and they moved him to catcher, and now he's up here, and now all of a sudden he's not old at 24 and underdeveloping. Now he's young, 25, and he's a terrific catcher.
Sure.
I keep spitting out examples. This is a bunch of hoo-ha. This is a bunch of...
These are people that are paid to evaluate players. This is what they do, and that's what they're saying. I think it's worthy to bring to these fine airwaves.
I know players. I don't know scouts. Do they have a record? Like, who's the scout, you know, that found Wilson Contreras? Who's the scout that found, Jose Abreu, Javi Baez? I mean, it depends. If a guy has been right every time, I have more respect for him than just he's a faceless scout.
Okay. I get that. I think what's going on here.
Yes.
I think what I'm coming up against is that you don't like to. You're an optimist. You want to.
I am an optimist.
You don't want.
I'm a cockeyed optimist.
Yeah. You don't want to rule out a young guy who's just coming into the game, and that'd be rude. So I appreciate that, but I'm trying to give Cub fans some comfort here, mainly myself.
The comfort is wearing 62. The comfort is starting tomorrow.
That's okay. Okay. And if right. But I don't want to give up the entire world from, and that's another thing with Jose Quintana. Good pitcher. Real solid. The whole thing. He's not Chris Sale. You didn't get Justin Verlander in his prime. You didn't get Max Scherzer. He's a good pitcher. He's a very good pitcher. But there is I do think that we have to be realistic about what he is. This is not your number one lockdown. Have him on the mound. You know he's going to win a World Series game. That's not the guy. There's a reason, and yes, the White Sox supported him worse than everybody, than any pitcher in all of baseball. But there is a reason why he's only won over 10 games one time.
Do you know his ERA for his career is 3.5?
It's a very good ERA.
In the American League.
And it'll get. And
in the American League, where they have, instead of a pitcher, a DH hitting third or fourth.
Yes, and at U.S. Cellular, now Guaranteed Rate Field,
right.
Which is a tremendous.
Launching pad.
Right. Hey, listen, I could, among all major leagues.
Launching pad. You know, NASA should send the next rocket ship to the moon from Guaranteed Rate Field.
Among all major league starters with 600 innings from 2013 through 2016. Now, Quintana's WAR, wins over replacement player. This is how the baseball gurus out there grade things. He had an 18.1 WAR. Now, where do you think that ranks amongst all pitchers from that time?
Third.
Seventh. But that's pretty damn good. Clayton Kershaw, Max Scherzer, Chris Sale, Cole Hamels, Zach Greinke, Corey Kluber, and then Quintana.
Listen to those guys you're throwing out.
Right, right.
I mean, those are names. Those are the best pitchers in baseball.
Listen, when I listen to Theo Epstein.
Can you give me that list again? It started out Kershaw and Scherzer.
Clayton Kershaw, Max Scherzer, Chris Sale. And by the way, I was just making the point. He's not those guys, but he's right behind them. Cole Hamels, Zach Greinke, Corey Kluber. Phenomenal. Phenomenal. That's who you're getting.
Right. So, I mean, with run support, you know, this guy could be a perennial all-star.
Let's go to our run support expert, Dan Long, on that. Do the Cubs support runners? Do they actually score runs? Because I've been watching the Cubs this year. Your thoughts on that, Dan?
Well, they have in the second half so far.
There you go. So we'll
averaging
see.
9 runs a game.
We'll see if
they are right at the bottom of the NL in terms of scoring with runners in scoring position and runners in scoring position in 2 outs.
They've been pathetic.
There's like 3 teams that are worse. In all of baseball, there's only 3 teams that are worse.
Right. So I'm just a memo to Jose Quintana. Don't be super optimistic that you're going to get better run support. Maybe you will, but this has not been the 2016 Cubs. This has most definitely been the 2017 Cubs. The Cubs should support him tomorrow. Ubaldo Jimenez is starting for the Orioles. He's got an ERA of 6.67.
Hey, the guy that pitched last night was doing pretty bad. And the guy pitching tonight has been god-awful the last month and a half. And the guy pitching tomorrow has been bad. I mean, I know it hasn't happened in, like, you know, forever, but the Cubs could sweep.
That would be amazing. And that's the other thing. Right now, the Brewers are playing the Phillies. And you have... We got a long way to go in the season, but we don't have a long way until the trade deadline. It's July 15th. We're talking...
I love it the Cubs struck early. I love it that they didn't wait till the 30th.
Hey man, listening to Theo's conference call, and when they were like, well, you know, Dylan Cease is like, well, you know, we've had a really good year with our pitching in the minors, so that kind of softened the blow of losing Cease. Like they that made me feel comfortable about the pitching. And then he's just sitting there like, look, you know, we need to address. It was so comforting listening to him talk. Like, I could just sit there and listen to Theo and feel. He just makes me feel good about the world. Yeah. Having that guy on your side is huge. Yeah. And Rick Hahn, I give him a ton of credit. He's done a great job rebuilding the White Sox. Hopefully, it works out for the Sox too. But like the fact that you don't. Who do you want to deal with in the game? You want to deal with people who don't know what they're doing, and that's kind of has been the Cubs. motto for so long. Jim Hendry giving up ridiculous players when the team was so far out of it. Like, hey, we're going to trade Chris Archer and Hak-Ju Lee and two other players for you, Matt Garza, because we want to go from 68 wins to 72. And then we're going to watch Chris Archer become a phenomenal pitcher who they die to have right now because Jim Hendry was trying to save his job. Like, those days are over and it feels good.
Wade Miley, who throws tonight for Baltimore, has been just a disaster. His ERA is 5, but in the last month and a half, his ERA has been 7.5. The Cubs got to jump on this guy tonight. And Arrieta, this is the first time that he's pitched in Baltimore, where the Cubs got him from since that trade. He pitched against the Orioles once 3 years ago at Wrigley, and he just stopped him. 4 hits, 1 run, and 7 innings. So, you know, it feels good. I don't want to get, you know, carried away, but, you know, I'm feeling good about the Cubbies.
Cubs lineup tonight, John Jay leads off. He will be your designated hitter. Then Bryant, Rizzo, Contreras, Ian Happ in left, hitting 5th. Russell at short, Hayward in right, Javi Baez at 2nd, Albert Almora Jr. in center. So the notable omissions there, no Kyle Schwarber, no Ben Zobrist, because they can't hit lefties for anything.
Zobrist is really bad against lefties. And Schwarber, you know, you feel like, man, he should be DHing in American League Park, but not against a southpaw.
Not against a southpaw. So, I mean, Madden is creeping into, hey, we're in August and we have to win now mode. Not messing around with you, Kyle Schwarber.
Right, and think about this. You know, so you give up Eloy Jimenez, and you give up, Dylan Cease, but you kept Ian Happ.
Kept Ian Happ. You kept Javi Baez.
Right. You kept Russell. You kept, Contreras. Mm-hmm. You know, guys that were rumored to be going. Schwarber.
I've got a beef with one of the guys you just named. You just named about 5 guys. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about my beef. Beef is good, but I was losing my mind last night watching one particular Cub. Actually, 2, but I want to focus on one of them.
So that's what happened to your mind.
Yeah. It was last night. It's gone forever. All right, come. And David Haw, your Chicago Tribune.
Yeah.
Will be here with us at 5:10, 720 WGN.
Russell batting 9th, and that ball driven out into deep left. It will go! And the Cubs lead again. 9-8. 5th home run tonight for the Cubs.
Thank you, Addison Russell. Got to admit, it doesn't feel quite the same with Addison Russell as it did last year, considering the off-the-field stuff. I just want to put that out there, that just for me, I know that's we don't need to go down that deep, dark road,
right, well,
but I didn't feel quite the same.
As the son and brother of attorneys, I can tell you that the man is innocent until proven guilty.
That's, of course, true.
Okay, and we talked about it with Paul Sullivan last week. Addison Russell should be riding pine. Javi Baez should be playing every day at short, and Addison Russell should be riding pine, playing, you know, half the games as opposed to almost all of them.
All right, I'm doing a flip on that. If I watch Javi Baez swing at one more, this is not, by the way, who I had an issue with last night, but he's number 2. If I watch Javi Baez, it is time for Javi Baez to get a concept of the strike zone. Stop swinging at pitches 3 feet outside, 3 feet over your head, and the reason why I just have a little bit of a, I don't want to call it anger because that would be,
or angst.
Disappointment, because I've seen Javi Baez, like last year in the playoffs, in the NLCS, when he was the MVP, I've seen him in game 1 of the NLDS in the 9th inning or the 8th inning against Johnny Cueto, whatever inning it was, have one of the greatest at-bats ever, laying off pitches then bombing one into the night to give the Cubs a 1-0 win. So I know he has the talent to do it. He's just, for whatever reason, trying to do too much, or I don't know what it is, but it's painful to watch him strike out 3 more times last night, have an on-base percentage under 300, and not getting better. He's just staying in the same place. He's reminding me of how I stay in the same place, and it's irritating.
Whoa, lie down. We'll talk about it.
Let's go projection. You know, so can I tell you who really was bothering me last night?
Who was bothering you last night?
So the Cubs can't throw a strike last night. The bullpen is struggling.
Bullpen's been great, but they were not good last night.
Okay. Wilson Contreras quit lining up on the outside corner of the plate with giving 1 inch of a strike zone, and then he's doing that. And then he's not if you watch him closely, he doesn't really give you a target. He's fidgeting around back there, moving around. He's got his mitt facing the dirt, and then he finally will bring it up, but it's low in the strike zone, which is something that he's been working on, getting guys lower strike. He doesn't just set up in the middle of the plate and put your mitt in the middle of the zone and sit there, period. Like, when they can't throw a strike, I was losing it. I really was.
Well, you know, you see so many catchers in this league frame balls, you know, where they give them a target and the pitch looks to be a ball, but they sort of bring it in, like, you know, 2 inches, and all of a sudden it becomes a strike. And, you know, Contreras, his arm. I mean, I love his arm. I love his attitude.
I love his three-run homer. I love Wilson Contreras. The play that he made on the little dribbler down the third base line last night was ridiculous.
And also, let's not forget this. They may be the only team in baseball whose fastest guy on the team is the catcher.
He's hit leadoff. I love Wilson Contreras. I love him.
You're nitpicking.
I am nitpicking.
What an exciting game last night.
It was phenomenal. It was phenomenal. I just thought it was, maybe, I don't know if I'm the only one that had that thought, but I was reading up today on his pitch framing. All the stuff is really from last year. I mean, Montero was a great pitch framer. David Ross was a great pitch framer. Contreras last year, young catcher, not a very good pitch framer. Not terrible, but not very good. And guys can get better at that. And I read a whole bunch of stuff about how the key for him framing is at the bottom of the zone. So I'm kind of watching him last night, how he starts low in the zone with where he's putting his mitt. They're trying to get that low strike.
I love the way he takes charge. I just love the way that he...
Really? You know,
yes. I for a young catcher, a guy that's in his first full season, to be looking out on the field on guys like, you know, Rizzo and, you know... They pick a couple of very, you know, successful veteran pitchers in Lackey and Lester. But I just love the way he takes charge. And after the game, you know, the two guys look like they've been leading the team are Rizzo and Contreras.
A little bit too much going out to the mound for me.
He goes out to the mound a lot. They may change the rule because of him.
He's I think he's at the mound right now. And the game starts in and out.
He could be at the mound.
Yeah. Speaking of taking charge, I want to give some love real quick here to the Fox Valley Blue umpires.
Yeah.
FFVBumpire.com. They had me out as the sixth member of the crew for the Chicago Police Department versus the Fire Department.
I'm sorry, aren't there four guys in a crew?
We had the right field line and the left field line as well.
Oh, I see. Like the playoffs.
Yep, it was a big game. Fire Department versus the Police Department. Police Department always wins. They won again. Their rotation's a little more solid going through a whole game. So I started out down the right field line, and I was filming the game and then got yelled at by the crew chief, Eric Sawchuk, who said, "Get off your phone there, buddy." But I was trying to give publicity. I apologized to the whole crew. And so then
all the cop players have those cameras on their chest now?
We're not doing that playing baseball.
Oh, okay.
So I'm just kind of chilling out in right field, right? Down the right field line. He moves me to third base.
Ooh.
And I didn't think it was going to happen.
Game's
closer. I get a line drive off my face. I got to watch out for check swings. I got runners on in front of me. Like, you got, you know, guys at third. I got to watch for pickoffs. A lot going on, man. That gig's not that easy.
You can talk to the third base coach. You can talk to the third baseman. You can talk to the runner. You can't talk to a base runner when you're doing the right field line.
Right. And then they put me over at first base. You start out in foul territory, Harry. You're right on the line, straddling the line at first, and you try to stay 10 feet from the first baseman. You're like on a rope, right? 10 feet to the first baseman. That's what they tell you. And so then when there's a ground ball hit in the infield, my tendency was to go right to the bag from foul territory. What you're supposed to do is get out there on the dirt so you get that angle. Not that easy. It's a lot going on there. My appreciation for the umpire has grown significantly from the experience. It was awesome. And thank you to the Fox Valley Blue umpires and to all of them, from Steven Swank, Eric Sawchuk, Jeff Collis, Bill Vincent, and Art Stewart. They were all awesome.
Well, someday I'll have to tell you the story about my dinner with Eric Gregg.
Great man. All right, quick timeout, 7:20. David Hall right after the news, 7:20 WGN.
Surprised you're listening to The Beat?
No, I'm not surprised at anything. I don't want to answer any questions like that.
Chicago sports spoken here. This is The Beat on 7:20 WGN.
5:06. Hope you're having a great Saturday. He hasn't written for a week, and so we just know that Chicago has been deprived because I believe David Hall was on vacation. Rumor has it he might have been wearing a Speedo on a beach. That's what I heard, Harry. I don't know if that's true or not. And he joins us now on 720 WGN. David Hall, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. Did you get a good tan?
Yeah, no, there was plenty of beach, no Speedo, Carm. And I would come off vacation to talk tennis in Wimbledon any day for you.
That is so incredibly – for the record, I love Roger Federer tomorrow, but don't count out Marin Cilic, who has the serve that can translate
hold
well.
Hold on. Someone's at the door.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the Cubs and Sox make this blockbuster deal, and you're going to lead with Wimbledon.
Huge.
And I found out yesterday that Serena once tried to deposit a – did you hear this, D-Haunt? By the way, a pleasure to have you on, D-Haunt.
Thanks, Harry.
Did you hear Serena Williams try to deposit a $1 million check at the ATM?
What's wrong with that?
Did not know that, but you know, I have not been paying that close attention to the news, as Carm pointed out. I've been off a few days, a week, and plenty going on though, and eager to get back at it.
Right. So, I mean, doesn't this trade look like both general managers are geniuses, and that this trade is great for both teams?
No doubt. Look, we live in a society now where everybody wants to be a GM. We have, you know, from fantasy baseball, fantasy, every sport, you can, you know, manipulate your own roster and compete with your friends and your coworkers, and because everybody thinks that they know how to make the big trade, and everybody wants to tell their favorite team's executive how to act. And it never happens that the guys that you're trying to give advice take it. And in this case, both seem to have taken it. And Theo Epstein did what a lot of people have been urging him to do. It made a lot of sense for months now. I mean, I wrote back in early May, we put the big picture of Jose Quintana and broached the whole idea of him being traded to the Cubs. And that certainly wasn't, we weren't on an island there. And Rick Hahn's been getting, you know, free advice on Quintana's next suitor, trade him to the Cubs since November. Very seldom does it happen when executives act in a way that reflect, you know, the fan base and do something that is, you know, almost consensus, has a consensus of approval. And this is one of those rare trades, and it is win-win for both teams.
Well, let's give David Haw at least 2% credit for the deal going down, because the last time you wrote David Haw was July the 8th, and you were taking a little bit of a curious glance at Theo Epstein, was saying that all the help that the Cubs needed was in that clubhouse. And you write here, but come on, he can't be serious. A guy as smart as Epstein can't really think the team that underachieved in the first half of the season needs no outside help to give the Cubs the best chance to defend their World Series title. So you didn't buy it. And he was doing his best, hey, we believe in you guys act, but he also, behind the scenes, obviously was working his Theo magic.
Didn't buy it, Carm. I think that was a case where Theo is perplexed by the Cubs' first half, maybe as anybody. Certainly he can explain it more eloquently than most of us. And I think he got in a case where, you know, being accessible to the media, he got in front of a bunch of microphones and reporters and didn't seem like he was having a great day. He was kind of cranky that day. and he said some things that I think were a little misleading. And maybe they were intentional and maybe they weren't. Maybe it was just, you know, the mood he was in. But it was ridiculous to consider that a guy as pragmatic and problem solution oriented as Theo Epstein, he solves problems, he fixes situations. For him to sit there in the Cubs dugout that day and to suggest that the solution could be found within that clubhouse just did not add up for anybody that's paid attention since October 2011. So, yeah, I mean, I wrote that, and maybe it was a little bit of a gamble, but it wasn't really that risky of a thing to say if you've been paying attention to the way Theo Epstein operates all these years.
David, if I go player for player with the Cubs and the Brewers, it's very hard to find a Brewer that I would really want to take over the Cub at that position. And your paper, the Tribune, had a whole thing about all these, you know, bookmaking joints still have the Cubs as prohibitive favorites. Do you believe the Cubs, 5.5 games out on July 15th, do you believe they will, in fact, win the division over the Milwaukee Brewers?
Yeah, I do. I mean, and that's not, you know, I mean, you know, you guys know I'm not like a homer or a fan or a cap or anything. I mean, I think that
Slam.
You look at it objectively, and they still have the experience of winning in October. And that's not just last year, but it's the last 2 years. You know, they have a team that, you know, maybe their pitching staff is a little tired, but I think the Quintana trade suggests that there's going to be a little bit of a boost, a resurgence, a revival, if you will. Last night was, you know, typical of the first half of the season where, you know, you gave up a lot of runs, and but they won, and they relied on the home run. I do think, Harry, that the Brewers are going to come back to earth a little bit. I do think the Cubs are going to hit their stride. Not basing that just on the fact that, you know, fandom or anything. I just think experience, and I think that is going to kick in at some point that you go with the teams that have done it before. There's a lot of baseball left to be played. It's been very frustrating for people to follow. It's been very kind of inconsistent, you know, to write about, because you think that you have this things, you know, identified as problem areas and things are going to go the way you think, and you write and you talk about, and then they make you look like a fool. So it has been frustrating for everybody, but I do think that by the end of this month, and maybe there's one more, you know, consequential trade in the Cubs, that they will get a team together that's going to probably, you know, might take until mid-September, might take until late September. What great drama that will be, and all you'll be missing is a Bears 0-4 start.
Okay, that's interesting, because I think they need to play well in these next 2 weeks, so they will make that additional move. And one name that's been out there, somewhat surprisingly to me, is Kyle Schwarber going to Detroit for one of their young pitchers, perhaps. So what do you make of those rumors?
Well, first of all, I don't think they have to play well to be in the buying mode, okay? I reject any suggestion that they would even contemplate being a seller for the reasons we already discussed. The Cubs are not selling, okay? The window is wide open. This is one of those years in the windows wide open. They're going for it, and they should. And if they don't, we should kill them for it. Not literally, but with criticism.
Well, but it,
okay?
But
there's no argument, Carm, before you go down that road, that I'll buy that says the Cubs should be in selling mode if they struggle in the next 2 weeks.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying there's a level of aggressiveness that they might be willing to do in 2 weeks if they close the gap versus if they're sitting here seven out. I think there's a different mind. I'm not saying they're going to sell. They're clearly not going to.
Yep.
But I do think they'll be more aggressive if they close the gap. That's what I'm trying
to
make.
Okay, that's fair. I think they should be as aggressive regardless of the record. They think they should be aggressive from now until midnight and July 31st. Okay, that aside, they're not. I would be more surprised by any. I was not surprised by the Quintana trade necessarily. I think it was shocking that it actually happened. But I'd be even shocked to a greater degree if they traded Schwarber because of, again, everything that Theo Epstein has indicated, and this isn't just him bluffing on something he wants to do, something on an intention. You know, Kyle Schwarber, that's a relationship. That's a commitment. I think that is, to me, a little bit deeper than just saying, well, we're going to find the solution in our clubhouse, and very vaguely and generally saying that we believe in our team and we're going to put those guys on notice. That was one thing. This is another. The relationship business is something he excels in very well, and I think that would, to me, he has made whatever assurances, or it would almost betray everything that he has stood for or said about his relationship with a young guy that he's identified with in Schwarber to trade him now. So I don't think that's going to happen.
The star of the Ball State Cardinals defense, David Haugh, visiting for a few more minutes with Mark Carmen and myself on The Beat on Radio 720 WGN.
And a quick interjection there, Harry. Yeah. September 2nd at Champaign, Ball State, Illinois. Be there. Love you, Smith.
Let's go, Cardinals.
I'll win. Jason Hayward last night was phenomenal. First time up, hits a rope to left. Then he crushes one onto Utah Street, only it's not spelled like the state. But the best thing he did all night was that catch in that crazy corner, the right field corner in foul territory. You know, I've always been an advocate that Baez should play every day because of his defense. I think I want Hayward in right, not center, but I want Hayward in right every day. Do you think that he is that good he deserves to play every day?
No doubt about it, and you get your money's worth finally. That's the only corner in right field that demands an usher for the right fielder. And that's crazy, isn't it? He had to go this way, then you go that way.
It's nuts.
And he made it look effortless. And that's what he's paid well to do. He should be playing every day. It's almost ridiculous. And it's a very good point, and it's a salient point in question, Harry. But think about how silly it does sound because of the guy who's making what he's making to think that we have to say that he deserves to play every day. And yet, because of last season, you kind of have to reaffirm that.
Right.
They're much better with him playing the way that he is now. And I think that kind of does allow Schwarber to be treated and handled the way that he was, and which is a smart thing. Send him down, let him come back, let him minimize expectations, let Schwarber play against right-handers. You know, I think that Hayward helps you defensively, again, with a team that needs, you know, to every ounce of defense this year more than ever. And also I think that, you know, he's showing a little bit more authority at the plate, like the swing is finally coming around. So he could be a big part of this, and I expect him to be a big part of this. And if he's not a big part of this, then
problem.
I think the Cubs are in trouble.
See, and I would – nobody could tell me that if the Cubs could go back in time, with even the speech included and his better play this year, that they'd do the Hayward deal again. There's no way you're paying this guy mid –
Carm.
David.
They're doing it again. They do it again.
No
every
way.
Day. Every day. Carm, who is going to get up and talk – to that team in that way, in that weight room? Carm, this is the stuff of legends. Come on.
Okay, if you're gonna boil it all down to the speech, you have a good argument. I can't. I think he's worth double the $184 million for the speech alone.
You know what they did to his speaking fees forever, though.
Okay, fine. He gave the speech. They won the World Series. It ended a 108-year drought. He's worth the money. It's still painful for me to see. And I don't even know if I even want Jake Arrieta back. But the fact that they can't afford necessarily elite pitching like a Johnny Cueto because they're paying Hayward makes me nauseous on some level. But I'll just remind myself that he gave the speech. He gave the speech. He gave the speech.
The speech aside, you were at a point in time as an organization where You established legitimacy by getting John Lester. He legitimized your pitching staff and the fact that you were serious about contending. And he got Joe, you know, the Joe Maddon factor, and he legitimized that idea. When you went out and got Jason Hayward, it was that you were not content to just get to a certain point in this progression.
True.
It was you were going to spend X amount of dollars, whatever it took, the blank check to prosperity. And that was what he represented. He had to be there. Even though he stunk, up until his oratorical skill was the most memorable thing of 2016, that was worth every penny.
And that's true, too. It was we're going from here to the next level, to the World Series level. We're signing the premium outfielder in his prime at 26. These guys don't become available, all that.
And if you haven't seen it, you must check out the Lego parody of that Game 7 of the World Series, which includes Jason Hayward giving the pep talk during the rain delay. Have you seen that, D-Haw?
I have seen that. It's been a few months now, Harry, but I recommend the Lego movie as well.
That's so great. Now, there's so many things to talk about because we haven't had the chance to chat for so long, and I want to ask you about, I loved your Harbaugh visiting the Pope stuff, three yards, you know, and a chimney full of smoke. And I love the Blackhawk convention is going to last, longer than the Blackhawks did in the playoffs. But Clay Matthews Jr. this week said that he hopes the new Bears quarterback will pad his stats like Jay Cutler did. The man is retired. The man is in a broadcasting booth, and Clay Matthews Jr. is still going after him. You know,
what's he think he is? A member of the Chicago media?
I mean,
there's their guys in town who still take shots at Jay Cutler. I mean, look. It's tired. It's old. He's above that. People are beyond that. Move on. Yeah, everybody should move on. Jay Cutler was an easy target. He was Chicago's pinata for a long time. And he's in the booth now. And he's probably going to be very good at what he does. Get used to it, okay? Jay Cutler does not have to be your target of your scorn anymore. Anybody. The more Jay Cutler receives criticism after the fact, after his last down in Chicago, the more it says about the person doing the criticizing than it does Jay Cutler.
Well, Dan Hampton thinks they would have won 4 or 5 Super Bowls with them.
Well, come on, don't put me in that category. I'm not going that far, Carl. Okay?
I didn't think you were. I just want to name.
I like to land in the middle ground here, guys. Okay, that's ridiculous too. I love Hamp, but come on, 4 Super Bowls?
Yeah, it was aggressive. There's no doubt. Hey, yeah. Just back to baseball for 1 second. Yeah. For your view of Rick Hahn and the White Sox right now, what would you say?
Has a general manager of a fourth place team ever won Executive of the Year? This guy has done everything that he said he was going to do the minute they decided to go down this road. Sale, Eaton, Quintana, 3 guys, 11 prospects, best farm system in baseball, doing the best job of any executive in baseball at this moment. I think the Sox have to be really as happy as any last place team can be.
And you know, it's amazing because they were like the worst minor league system in baseball. And just with 3 moves, the guy has gone from worst to first.
He's hitting home runs.
It shows you what commitment can do, Kerry. You commit to go down a path, and you go down that path, and look what happens. It's like if you look at your garage and you still let it, you know, throw one more thing in there. Oh, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's for storage. And then all of a sudden you say, well, we're going to clean the garage. And you commit to cleaning the garage. It's going to look really good, and you're going to get really organized, and it's going to look really efficient. But until you commit to it, it's just a bunch of stuff laying around. The Sox committed to a direction. They've got the best farm system in baseball. Can't wait till 2020.
It's going to be Quintana on the mound versus Eloy, 2021, Game 7, World Series, Chicago upside down. It could happen.
How many World Series will the Cubs have won by then, Carm?
I'll say they've 4. Won one more. Just give me one more.
And you 4. Know, and you know why?
Why?
Hayward.
If Jason Hayward gets a big hit in the playoffs this year or any year, I will remember this conversation. And
he can hit 0.17, and just give him the microphone.
Go, Jay Hay. It was an amazing moment last year. We'll always remember the speech. David Haugh, you're the best. Appreciate you, and welcome back to town. Hope you had a great vacation.
Guys. Thanks a lot, I did. Take care.
David Haugh of your Chicago Tribune. Love talking to D.
Thanks,
Haugh.
David. Terrific.
All right. We have a new hairy game coming up at 5:30, 7:20. WGN, you want to say what the game is? We can do it right in about 2 minutes.
We'll need 2 contestants to take on Carm. No, it takes more than one man to beat Mark Kerman.
We'll explain further in 2 minutes.
Or a woman.
On 720 WGN. Argument in the break was how good was Jason Hayward's catch at the right field corner. I mean, to me, he's a major league outfielder. He went into the corner, and he made a nice catch. Let's not go crazy here.
Carm, I love you, but that catch was phenomenal.
It was a good catch.
He doesn't play in that stadium hardly ever, okay?
Great, good
and
catch.
And he went. The guys on the Orioles who play there 81 games a year were shocked that a right fielder made that play.
It's a very nice play. I've seen 1,000 million better.
1,000 million.
That's a number.
You haven't.
But I'll
give you that it's a number, but I won't give you that they've been that many better plays.
The best defensive play last night, there were 2 that were better than that play. For Contreras' wheeling, spinning, unbelievable play on the chopper, I think Adam Jones said it, I forget. Whoever it was, doesn't matter. That was a ridiculous play. And even better than that was the near double play turn by Javi Baez on a ball up the middle. Yeah. He backhands it, looks for Addison Russell, who's right sitting next to him. He's got to sprint to the bag, beats the runner, and then leaps and barely misses getting a double play. That was incredible.
And let's not be remiss to go without giving the Sox some love. The Tim Anderson play. Tim Anderson made a leaping catch of a ball that was going into center field. He had to leap, go up in the air, and to his left, like me going for a Hostess Ding Dong, just up on the top shelf. It was a great play by Tim Anderson, and since he put his glasses on, he's a different player. It sounds like a dumb thing, but people can see better when they have their glasses on.
It does work that way. That's true. And he has had a rough season. But there is. I'm not going to dispute.
You don't wear glasses. Do you wear contacts?
No, I'm fortunate that I have not had that happen in my life, and I'm very scared of it. But thank you for bringing it up. What are you getting at?
I was saying I've had to wear glasses since I was in first grade. You know, because like the nasally voice and being overweight weren't hard enough to get girls. So I also have to wear glasses. And when I did stand up, I wore contacts. And auditioning, I wore contacts. And I didn't wear them for this audition last week, and I was awful. But if you are wearing glasses and you take them off, you can't see. I don't know how the guy was playing baseball without being able to see.
And now he can. There we go.
You know, I mean, just Tim Anderson, you know, Kareem with the goggles, James Worthy with the goggles. Well, James Worthy wore them because he got poked in the eye.
There was a, okay, I forget who I'm thinking of. There was some, like, there was another, like, Cub player who, or White Sox guy, I forget, who couldn't see, and then all of a sudden he could see, and everybody thought that was going to be the change, and then it turned out that it wasn't the change. So I'm just reserving judgment that Tim Anderson is going to be able to, I don't know, conceptualize the strike zone. Your game coming up at, right after the 5:30 news.
We need two callers to take on Carm in the Baltimore game.
The Baltimore game. Rare opportunity.
Prizes to be had.
Great prizes. We're giving away a pair of tickets to the Chicago Blackhawks fan convention next weekend. You got to play the Baltimore game. Great gift opportunity for you. 312-981-7200. News in 2 minutes on 720 WGN. All right, this music can only mean one thing. It's time for the Baltimore game. I have no idea the relevance of this music to the Baltimore game, but there might be relevance. There's no relevance.
There is none, no.
Yeah, but it feels like the Baltimore game. All right. It's like, I don't know. All right, it's a Harry game. Harry is very creative, as we all know, and we're going to play the Baltimore game right now, and it's me versus two WGN radio callers. So I do feel nervous right now. Dave, welcome to WGN. How are you? Dave?
Oh, I'm here. Sorry.
There you go, buddy. All right. And let's bring in Jake. What's up, Jake?
Hey, I'm here. What's up?
You two are playing against me. It's David and Jake versus at the Carm on Twitter. Please follow me. You have a rare opportunity right now. If you follow at the Carm, you could be my 7,439th caller, follower.
Let's go, Jake.
All right, so Dave and Jake, you know, talk things out. There is a time limit, but talk things out. You got two minds, so you know you guys theoretically have an advantage here against Carm, who has lost his mind. It's the Baltimore game. Every answer has something to do with the great city of Baltimore.
Baltimore.
All right, five questions apiece. All right, Dave and Jake, you ready?
Ready.
Hang on. Should we tell them what they're playing for?
Yes, Dan Long, what are they playing for?
How about a pair of tickets to the 10th annual Chicago Blackhawks convention at the Hilton Hotel of Chicago next weekend, July 21st through the 23rd. Stop by and join our live broadcast from the convention on Saturday the 22nd, 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Brought to you by Meijer, now offering home delivery across Chicagoland.
Yes, we're going to be live out there. Where's next weekend?
Baltimore.
What?
Baltimore.
Baltimore? What's that?
What's your name?
What?
Where's your farm?
What?
What's your name?
What?
Where's your farm?
What?
What's your name?
What?
Where's your farm?
What? Baltimore.
What? Baltimore?
What?
What's that?
What's
your name?
What?
Blackhawk convention sold out again. It's hard to believe that there's been 10 of them, that this is brilliant. Every other team has copied what the Hawks have done.
This is an incredible Baltimore rap right now. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, from Scarface.
And super excited. I thought that was going to be a question. What is this from? And I like my chances because I love Scarface, but apparently that's not a question.
All right,
well,
Dave and Jake, here you go. Question one. Before he went to Law & Order SVU, Richard Belzer's Detective John Munch investigated gritty crimes with Andre Brower and Yaphet Kotto on this show about hard-nosed Baltimore detectives. What TV show am I talking about?
Oh, man. Jake, do you know? I have no idea.
That's not good for you two.
Guys, anything? We were looking for...
I don't get to answer and steal? What is this?
You can answer and steal if you like.
The Wire.
Incorrect.
That's not The Wire?
No, it's Homicide. Life on the Streets.
Come on.
All right, so nobody scored on that. Carm, here's your question.
Okay.
This is the other Baltimore cop show. It starred Dominic West, and it focused on the Charm City drug scene as seen through the eyes of drug dealers and cops.
The Wire.
The Wire is correct.
Yes.
It is 1-0, but you guys can rally.
1-0, Carm.
So
1-0, Carm.
So you
1-0, Carm.
Okay, you guys can hang on. Carm. You go first this round. Yep. This beautiful blonde is born in Baltimore, and she stars as Claire Dunphy, Phil's wife, on Modern Family.
No. I don't have it. I'm out.
It's guys, you want to steal? Can either one of you give me the actress's name?
You said stealing was illegal a second ago.
No, you got a chance.
Oh, I did?
Didn't you just try to steal, but you had the wrong show?
I did, but I didn't think you were going to give me credit. Go ahead.
Jake, either one of you got the actress's name?
Julie Bowen.
Julie Bowen is correct, and it's 1-1.
Way to go, Jake.
All right, now, guys, there's a chance for you to jump in front. In which Springsteen song does he begin, "Got a Wife and Kid in Baltimore," Jack?
Wife and kid in Baltimore?
Jack. Do you have it?
Dave. Man, I know it, but I just can't think of it.
Carmen,
I know the lyric. Hungry Heart.
Hungry Heart? Yeah. Let's find out if you're right.
Good job.
Just like that, the visitors are up. Jake and Dave up 2-1 on Carm. All right, Jake and Dave, good luck to you this round. We're flipping back and forth. Who goes first each round?
I'm rooting for Dave and Jake. I'm just trying to make myself, I got to compete. That's what life is about, competition, Harry.
Okay. Guys, in the trade with the Orioles that brought Jake Arrieta to town, which current Cubs relief pitcher came with him?
Didn't they go first last time? What's going on here?
You went first last time. No. You had the Modern Family question.
But
Graham.
Go ahead. Never mind. I don't want to get salty here. Clearly, they got the first answer on the Bruce Springsteen song. Did they not, Dan Long?
That was the same round.
Yes. Oh, I see. We're doing rounds. I got you. Go ahead.
Guys.
Graham.
Graham. Incorrectamundo. Carm, would you like to steal this question?
Who did the Cubs give up for Jake Arrieta?
No. When the Cubs haven't given anybody up for Arrieta yet. When the Cubs got Jake Arrieta, this current relief pitcher came with him.
Oh, that would be Pedro Strop.
Pedro Strop is correct. And it's 2-2, just like that. Now, Carm, you can go in front if you can answer this correctly. He's the current manager of the Orioles. When he was the Yankees manager in the 90s, he often played himself on
Buck Showalter.
I couldn't even get the question out. Seinfeld. He was great on Seinfeld. So it's 3-2 now, guys. But you can come back. You can still win this. I believe in you.
I believe in you guys, too.
You can do this. All right, Carm.
Yes.
He is a Baltimore native who starred in the movies Fight Club, Rounders, and The Score.
Oh, my Lord. He's a Baltimore native. Ed Norton.
Ed Norton is correct.
Bang.
Look at you. Guys, got to get this to stay within one. He grew up in Baltimore and starred in the movies Fargo, Boogie Nights, and he's currently the star of the television show Shameless.
Dirk Diggler.
Guys, give me the actor that plays the lead on Shameless. William J. Macy is correct.
Good job.
William H. Macy is correct. Yes. All right, they're within one. They need a point here tie you up.
This is the final question, huh?
Yes, final question, and I got faith in them. Dave and Jake, this Baltimore native, the Ravens, were named for a poem written by him.
Ooh.
The Baltimore Ravens are named for a poem written by this favorite son of Baltimore.
Wouldn't be Edgar Allan Poe?
It is, yeah. Edgar Allan Poe.
Wow.
The Raven?
I had that, too. I was counting the victory.
Okay, now, Carm.
That's the only poet I think I ever know.
If you get
ever.
This...
Seriously.
If you right. get this right, Carm,
yeah.
Then you win.
Okay.
If you...
If I don't, Dave, we all tie and go home happy?
In the event of a tie, the listeners win the tickets to the Blackhawk Convention, the sold-out Blackhawk Convention.
Dave and Jake, we're going to give you the tickets regardless, but just...
When the Ravens beat the Giants in the Super Bowl, who was their quarterback?
When the Ravens beat the Giants in the Joe Flacco.
Joe Flacco, let's find out if Carm is right.
There was a lot of criticism on the worst quarterback to ever go to the Super Bowl. Now, I had a big chip on my shoulder.
Back to throw, Trent Dilfer. Throwing deep down the middle for Stokely. He's got it. 10-5.
That's illegal. Like the last.
What do you mean? Joe Flacco?
Oh, God.
Joe Flacco?
They beat
the 49ers.
That's terrible.
Harbaugh versus Harbaugh.
That's terrible. That's terrible. That's terrible. That's terrible.
Jake and...
I was thinking of the last time they were there. Okay,
And Dave by... Can you believe you missed that? Jake and Dave by rallying. Dan Long, tell them what they've won.
How about a well, two pairs of tickets now to the 10th annual Chicago Blackhawks convention at the Hilton Chicago Hotel. That's a clumsy phrase. On July 21st through the 23rd, stop by and join our live broadcast if you go down there. From the convention, Saturday the 22nd, 4 to 7, it's The Beat, brought to you by Meijer, now offering home delivery across Chicagoland.
Dave and Jake, congratulations. Thanks for joining the show.
Thank you. Way to go, Jake.
And hang on the line so I can take down your info.
I feel like a friendship has been born here.
For real, those two are tight.
I think right now they're going to stay on the line and just have a cigarette.
And talk to Dan Long. It's one of the more amazing opportunities you could ever have on a Saturday afternoon at 5:45.
Now,
with the Cubs coming up at 6 o'clock. But don't worry about that because we're going to have Brian Scalabrine on the show.
White Mamba?
White Mamba will be here, and then at 6:35, we'll be talking to Mike Dice, my guy from fansided.com, about the Mayweather situation with Conor McGregor, which has been a very, what would you call it? It's been very entertaining this week.
It has. It's really a sham. So, it's not a fight.
It's right.
It's a sham.
You think so?
Yes.
Coming on back here, though, Harry.
Yeah, talk about Trent Dilfer?
We're not going to talk about Trent Dilfer. We are going to talk about Wet Butt 23, though, because that seven. We'll do that and a couple other little tidbits that I got to get out off my chest here before we have two guests in the 6 o'clock hour. So a lot to do. Congratulations to Dave and Jake. Congratulations to you, Harry, on another successful Harry Tynowitz game.
And first of all, it's our game. It's not my game.
No, it's our game.
What we do on this show, we do it together.
We
succeed together if we succeed.
That may be true, but you put together the game. You get credit for the game. I want to give credit where credit is due. You took the time to put the questions together. I'm a guy who wants to say what's so, and what's so is that you put the work in on the Baltimore game.
No. I was thinking about playing the James Taylor game.
Well, that would have been interesting.
But I figured Baltimore game, we could do more sports questions.
Well, there...
But James Taylor, there's a lot of football players, like Edgerrin James would have been an answer.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's always next week.
Well, James Taylor will have been gone.
Yeah, okay. It's fine, but...
Hawks convention. I'm looking forward to the Hawks convention.
Me as well. 720 WGN. All right, story time here, Harry. 720 WGN. Hope you're having a great Saturday. I'm Mark Harmon. He's Harry Tynowitz.
Love stories.
So... I'm watching the game last night. I was over at the girlfriend's house, right? And we're enjoying the baseball game. I walk in, it's 6-0 Cubs.
All right.
Okay. I bring over dinner. We sit down.
Did she enjoy the Fritos?
She enjoyed the Fritos. Yes. It was a wonderful dinner that I brought over, Harry. And so it's 8-0 Cubs. And you know, she basically thinks we're going to win the game 16-0. I mean, it's fourth inning. That's how
why
it works, right?
Why wouldn't
you're
she?
On that pace. So we sit down, and we're watching the game, and it gets to 8-1, 8-2, 8-4, 8-5, 8-6. And we're holding hands on the couch, watching Cubs baseball, just enjoying the
Holding hands?
Yes. It was just a nice
Man, you guys are definitely not married.
Right. Very much so. We're not married. That's correct. And so... You know, it's a Friday. It's been a long week. People have been working hard. And so I fall asleep, which is not abnormal. 8-6 Friday night. Maybe it was like the stress of the game. I just wanted to disengage. And so I wake up, you know, maybe 20 minutes later, and I look at the TV, and it's 8-8. And I notice
how about it?
That she is asleep as well. So we both slept through the Mark Trumbo 2-run homer off of Koji Uehara. And so, which would have been a huge meltdown. I would have lost it. And miraculously, on some level, I was just asleep through it. And so when I wake up, Javi Baez is at the plate to start
the
night.
Cubs.
Right, pretty much. Javi's at the plate to start the ninth. I'm asleep. She's asleep. I don't want to wake her, right? And then Russell comes up, and he hits the bomb, and it's 9-8. And now I'm kind of, like, amused by the whole thing. Like, when is she going to wake up, and will she process what has gone on here? And so finally, she wakes up in the bottom of the ninth. It's 9-8 Cubs, and she's like, oh, we're still up a run. I'm like, it actually was tied. We both fell asleep.
They actually blew an 8-0 lead.
They blew an 8-0 lead. And who, by the way, didn't see that that was coming the whole night? Once Justin Grimm hit the mound, and Mike, even before Grimm, when Mike Montgomery started to melt down, it was like, this game is going to get interesting. I know it is. It just feels like right?
You mentioned Mike Montgomery. I mean, I want to go back to you and the girlfriend, but just a second here. They've got one lefty in the bullpen. Yeah. Mike Montgomery, and I know Kyle Hendricks is, for those of you who don't know, he's going to pitch Monday night at AA in Tennessee, and he's expected to come back to the Cubs for his next start after that. So why is, you know, I don't know if he's going to go to a six-man rotation, but with Quintana coming on board and Hendricks coming back, I was surprised Montgomery was the first guy to start.
So was I. I didn't quite get that. And what's going on clearly is that John Lester needs a break. He finished up the right. He finishes up the first half. He gives up 10 runs in the first
inning.
That was
a bad inning.
Yeah, and so
there was an error.
There was, but he was awful. And he's got great numbers in Baltimore.
Right.
Not as good a numbers in Atlanta. Now, it's a different team and all that, but he's pitched well in Baltimore, the whole thing.
Right. I thought we'd get Arrieta and then Lester on Saturday and then Quintana.
Sure, that would have made sense. However,
have a second lefty in the bullpen.
What's going on here is that they're giving Lester a break and giving him the weekend off, so he'll have a full, 9 days, 8 days, whatever it is, until he goes in Atlanta. And Mike Montgomery started last night.
All right, now back to the girlfriend.
Yeah.
Now, it's Friday night. You know, I always, when I was doing stand-up, Friday night was the rowdy night. You know, like, you looked forward to every night, but Friday night was kind of like guys are going to be out drinking after work, and by the time they, you know, you go up, it's going to be like everybody's just, you know, partying, crazy partying.
I brought over chicken quesadillas, Harry.
And chicken quesadillas to boot. How did she fall asleep? Were you talking?
We were talking, but, you know, we were watching the game. We were very studiously watching Cubs baseball. This was an important game, first game after the All-Star break.
It's a great quality to have, by the way. As a guy that dated many shallow women that didn't appreciate sports, Wendy loved sports.
Are you judging the lack of conversation that was going on? Is that what's going on
No,
right
I'm saying
now?
Maybe you were talking too much, and that's what did it.
No. I don't think that was it. I just think it was, again, you know, these things, you're sitting on a couch, it's Friday night,
yeah,
worked all week, yeah. Sometimes you take a little siesta.
See, I'm thinking the other way. I think you're setting up for a little post-game show.
There's time for everything in life, Harry. Can we move on? I'm uncomfortable now that you just threw that out there. Can I get Steve on the line here? Because,
sure.
Because it's very rare that I see what I see on the screen right now, which is wants to talk Wimbledon with Carm. Steve,
now I might fall asleep.
Steve, I love you. Thanks for calling. Let's talk some Wimbledon. You fired up for a Marin Cilic and a Roger Federer tomorrow morning. You want to come over?
Oh, yeah. I'm really excited. I'm a Fed fan, and I'm nervous because Cilic's won, I think, the last two they played, and he's 9 years younger, and I'm just hoping that to pull one more out.
So, okay, we're going for Harry.
What?
Respect the sport. You know that Fed's going for 19 tomorrow here, Steve. You know what his record is against Cilic?
6-1.
What's that?
6-1.
Yeah, okay. So okay.
Whoa.
Steve's
Whoa.
A real fan. Steve's on top of it. You know what his record is this year?
I think he's only lost two matches.
Steve's a real fan. He's 30-2, man. 30-2. He's 35 years old. He's having the best season of his career. It's such an outlier. It's unbelievable. I you know what his record is against the top 10 players in the game this year?
Oh my God.
I don't know that.
He's 9-0. 9-0 against the top 10.
Steve,
you can feel confident here, Steve.
Steve, do you find that these? I realize that Federer is great and Nadal's a great player, but don't you think tennis was a lot more exciting when other people were playing? I find
you can't live in the past, Harry. We have to live in the present.
But
you can't
no,
go back to Connors no, and Borg and McEnroe.
But there's no personality here.
That's
Federer
not true.
And Nadal.
It's not what it was. But Steve, you defend it. Go ahead.
Well, I tell you what. Federer with 19 Grand Slams, one of the best athletes of all time. I mean, tennis is a very difficult sport.
Granted.
Extremely difficult. To be on this top of his game for 16 years is just unreal. I am just shocked he's doing this well. I think it's after Jordan gave him the shoes. Jordan gave him his own brand of shoes 3 years ago, and I think that
could have been it.
With this game, but
that could have been it.
I just... It just unbelievable. And just to be on this top of the sport for this long is just, it's incredible.
You know, there's a championship match tonight out in Winnetka, Steve, at the Nielsen tournament. You going?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Well,
are they serving strawberries and cream up in Winnetka?
They've got beers and everything you want out there, buddy. And it's a very affordable ticket, and there are great players. I don't know who's playing tonight because I haven't been following the tournament super closely, but that is tonight.
Winnetka's the home of what high school?
That would be the Nutria Trevians, the former home of Harry Tynowitz?
Yes.
There you go. Hey, Steve.
I'll tell you what. Mackinac's got a great book out, guys. It's called, but seriously, it's really good stuff.
I'm reading Agassi's book for the first time right now, Steve. It's incredible.
You know what I found crazy? I haven't read the book, but I read the excerpt where he talks about Andy Warhol getting in the way of his sex life. Did you hear about that, Kern?
No.
He said he'd
basically, McEnroe was hooking up with Tatum O'Neal at a party. They were on drugs, and Warhol was taking pictures of him.
Wow.
And he said that he would be hitting on different, like, supermodels at parties and different girls at parties. And Andy Warhol would, like, just, like, you know, hound him. Like, you know, come bother him.
Good stuff. Steve, thanks for the call, man.
Hey, thanks, Kurt.
You got it. And we didn't even get to the women's side. Venus making it to the finals of Wimbledon at 37 years old is an incredible accomplishment.
That is impressive.
And congratulations to Garbine Muguruza for taking her down today. She had two set points in the first set, but didn't get either of them, and then ended up losing the second set 6-0, so that was a rough ending. Rough ending for Venus. Good for Garbine, who has now beaten both Williams sisters in a Grand Slam final. As you remember,
it's hard to do.
She beat Serena in the French Open a couple of years back. So, again, Muguruza is the only player out there that can say that. It's beat both Williams sisters in a Grand Slam final. I love tennis, and thank you for the opportunity to talk to you here for 5 seconds. That was really enjoyable for me. By the way, I also won my match today in the Shoreline League. Was down 4-1 in the first set. Harry came back for a 7-5 first set winner.
Did your girlfriend fall asleep?
Nobody came out to support the match. My brother was there. He won in doubles, and I was down 3-2 in the second, won the final four games. We had a little bit of a controversy today. He tried to short me on a line, and I had to.
How old?
I'd say in his 40s.
Well, that's good.
How about this? I gotta go. We gotta go to news. I'll tell the story later and think about whether I should rip on the people that played on the court next to me who yelled at me and then got a whole earful back from good old At the Carm.
Now back to the beat.
720 WGN.
WGN, 1 hour to go. Amy Guth warming up in the bullpen. She'll be here at 7. We have a special tribute for Amy when she comes in for
nice. Our
crosstalk. We're waiting on Brian Scalabrine, who's in a hotel room, and they're blocking Dan Long. Brian, of course, formerly played with the Bulls back in the day, and he was a Celtic. He was all around the NBA, the White Mamba, and he also does a little color commentary for the Celtics now. And he's playing in the Big Three, and he's very entertaining.
The Ice Cube League.
The Ice Cube League, yes. So we'll talk to Brian in a moment. While we have a second, Harry, one thing we didn't get to today is it was unfortunate for you, but you couldn't watch the All-Star game because of the weather. And I know that you like to, you know, get everything off your chest. So I'm giving you an opportunity right now to complain to the cable gods out there about what happened to you.
I mean, it's not a complaint of the cable. It's the weather. And I mean, I got off easy. I mean, I feel horrible for the people that lost their homes. And, you know, we had, like, record flooding going on. And, you know, Lake Forest Hospital just, you know, listening to Gian on the way in. And, you know, it's awful what happened to them. To me, what happened was in the 10th inning, I've got three TVs in my family room. And so I got that going for me, which is nice.
Congratulations.
I used to have one of them on, you know, a basic cable. So if there was bad weather and my DirecTV went out, I would always have one TV with the game. Well, my wife said, let's just get everything on DirecTV and let's just get, you know, the you know, computer and everything on DirecTV.
Go Wendy.
So, 10th inning, and, you know, top of the 10th, Wade Davis comes in, and the satellite takes out my the weather takes out my satellite.
Perfect timing. Did you see the bomb?
It's. I mean, I have a radio there. I'm not a amateur.
Are you serious?
I keep a radio downstairs for just such an occasion. The year the Bears opened at home against the Colts.
You're an incredible sports nerd. I didn't. I knew it had like a lot of depth to it.
You
but
did
that
say
is,
sports nerd.
Yes,
right?
I did.
I have the radio ready for such an occasion. It was hard for me to flip it to that station, but that's where I went. But it dawns on me. Like, all the times, every time the Pride and the Prejudice is on the air. Dan Long, have you ever seen Pride and the Prejudice?
He's working on Scalabrine, not the guy to ask right now. I've never seen it.
Okay, it's Jane Austen, and it's, you know, set 100 years ago in England and Jane Austen land, and it's a chick movie. And every time it's on, we see every second of it, okay? Steel Magnolias, it can be like, you know, like 32 degrees out and a snowstorm. And the second Steel Magnolias comes on, the snow stops. But like, I'm watching the All-Star game in the 10th inning, and all of a sudden, you know, it's like the Wizard of Oz, you know, the witch on the broom, and the houses are landing on people. I can't believe, you know, it's 2017 and my cable's out.
Technology is phenomenal, but sometimes it'll come back to bite you, Harry Tino, once these things happen. I felt
damn satellite. So I heard on the radio Wade Davis give up the bomb.
How about Wade Davis giving up the bomb? The lone Cub in the game, the only guy to go to the All-Star game along with the coaches. By the way, it was kind of painful for me to watch Joe Maddon and company just high-fiving Yadi Molina on his bomb.
Okay, but hold on.
I'm immature, and yes, go ahead.
The year that Gagne lost the All-Star game.
Mm-hmm.
It was the only blown save he had all year. And Hank Blaylock hit the home run, and Keith Foulke got the save.
Yeah, I don't care that he blew the game. I just think it was slightly
Who
indicative.
Who cares? Joe, but didn't you find this All-Star game to be so much better? We have not been on the air since the All-Star game took place. Isn't it so much better that Rob Manfred made this like it should be, just about like having fun?
I think that it's wonderful that the game is not for home field advantage in the World Series. That didn't bother me one bit.
Right.
And there were selfies being taken.
Okay, the selfie was great. Nelson Cruz, you're a genius.
Actually, wasn't a selfie. I'm saying that wrong. That he pulled out
a
phone and
asked Yadi to take a photo of him and Joe West.
Yeah, that was great.
5,000 games.
That's something Brian Scalabrine would do if he was a Major League Baseball player in the All-Star game. He would think so creatively to bring himself, with a phone.
Do you think that White Mamba drives the lane in the Big Three and he's got a selfie going on?
I mean, I think the fact that he's got White Mamba on his jersey is one of the more genius maneuvers in Big Three / basketball history. Brian Scalabrine joining us now on 720 WGN. What's up, Brian Scalabrine?
Wait. What happened? Because I'm thinking if I did drive the lane with a selfie, first of all, I'd have to be really good to be able to do something like that. But what happened with the baseball player?
You didn't see. It was Nelson Cruz of the Seattle Mariners. He comes to the plate in the All-Star game, and he pulls out from his back pocket his phone. He hands it to catcher Yadi Molina and says, "Will you take a picture with me and Joe West?" It would be like you taking a picture with, say, Joey Crawford. You know,
because about
the same. You know,
that would be a legendary move. I'm sure the fine would be astronomical, but not in the Big Three. The fine wouldn't be astronomical. They'd be all for that. But in the NBA, if I asked to take a selfie with Joe Crawford, how great would that be?
That would be awesome. So, Scal, first of all, it's a pleasure to have you on. You're legendary. We love your attitude and what you bring to the game. I saw the piece with Ice Cube and Allen Iverson and Jason Williams, and this is an intriguing league. What is it like to play in this Big Three with so many guys that thought they were, you know, all done competing?
Yeah, so I think the biggest maybe misconception is when you're going is that it's like some charity All-Star game. It is far from that. It's very competitive. It's high level. Guys really want to win, which is so different, right? Like the All-Star game in the NBA, they don't even want to win there. But here at the Big Three, we're like, we're giving it all we have. I think that's where I think guys miss that the most. Since being done playing, the idea of, you know, playing in the men's league, playing in the YMCA or whatever it may be, you're not getting the same type of competition where you're up against the clock or, you know, we're trying to score 50 and we're trying to beat the other team. That is something that you will never be able to replicate once you're done playing professional sports. And now it's back. And I think that's what guys are really excited about.
What do you think of the level right now, Scal? You're seeing out there and yourself just being able to compete. What would you say? And I know you guys are coming to Chicago. What's the date on the Chicago? I should have that in front of me.
Next week. I think it's next week. Yeah, it's next Sunday.
That's awesome. I want to go.
Yeah. So the level is like I said before, I think it's 3-on-3 has been difficult for me to figure out. I will say that. You know, like I've played. First of all, like for me, my game, I need an offense. I need structure. I need go here, go there. And it's a lot of like just individual one-on-one game, which these guys, and you can see with the court being so spaced out, one-on-one becomes like almost important, which kind of like nowadays when we look at the NBA and teams that go ISO, besides the Cavs at least, we think this is not good offense. You want to pass, you want to move, you want to do that. But I think after the first 3 weeks, I think I'm done with the one-on-one. I'm going to implement this week, implement some type of passing, some type of offense, and try to get some strategy out of it. Because if we continue to go down this road, first of all, I'm going to look awful, which I have for the first 3 weeks, and then our team is probably not going to win. So we're going to try to figure out different ways to get easy baskets.
Scal, who are some of the other former NBA players that you are playing with in this Big Three?
On my team?
On your team and in the league.
Oh, like guys like Al Harrington, Allen Iverson, Kenyon Martin, Steven Jackson, Jermaine O'Neal, Bonzi Wells. I mean, the list goes on and on. Mike James is there. On my team, I have Rasul Butler, who played with me in Chicago,
yeah.
Josh Childress. I just traded for a guy, Xavier Silas. Our best player is Derek Byers, but he played for the San Antonio Spurs for maybe like 2 months or 3 months, something like that. So it's just all former NBA players. And the one thing is, I think, for whatever reason, there's a lot of guys who are going to be in the NBA. And most of the guys I mentioned, they're big-time players. They're going to be in the NBA. But there's a lot of guys in that middle group that if they get the right opportunity, they can end up having a 10-, 15-year career. Or if they get the wrong opportunity, they end up having to go overseas. So I think we have a lot of that right now, a lot of guys in that group as well, where guys have or guys who have had some success and they felt like they had more to give, and the NBA was like, no, we're going a different route. So it's still a high level. Like guys are still like I said, they're competing and guys are banging. But once in a while, I mean, like just lining up against Allen Iverson and having him take you off the dribble, you're just like, oh my god, I can't believe AI is still playing.
It's so cool. I've been watching it. The games are on Fox Sports 1. Most of them have been on tape delay, but I guess you guys are going to have a live situation coming down later. And then you're going to be in Vegas when it's Mayweather and McGregor for that crazy bout, which is also going to be your championship game, which is August the 26th. Let's talk NBA for a second here, Scal. What were you disappointed? Working with the Celtics doing TV, that Jimmy Butler did not end up in Boston, or Paul George for that matter.
Yeah, so I understand the timing, and I'm surprised, as so much information out there, I'm surprised that the general public doesn't do a better job of explaining this. If you have assets and you trade for a guy like Paul George, then you ruin your cap situation, you ruin your cap space. So the idea of getting a Jimmy Butler, which would have mean, you give up the number one pick in the draft, you give up probably a future asset, and you give up two players, or you could sign Gordon Hayward and not give up anything, just cap space. You understand the difference? So
sure.
I think Danny Ainge's whole thing was, if I'm going to make a trade, I'm going to make a trade, and I'm not going to give up that much, or I'm going to keep my cap flexibility moving forward and have the ability to sign a Gordon Hayward, and that's what exactly happened. So I was surprised that everyone got on the Celtics for not doing things, which it seems odd, because you would think that with all the information out there, you would say Celtics don't want to do anything now. They want to wait to see if they can sign a guy. Right now, after Gordon Hayward committed, I'm sure that they would have been happy to trade for Jimmy Butler or happy to trade for Paul George. But doing it before that would have really messed them up as far as a cap situation.
And Scal, I don't know if you'll remember this or not, but I used to be on another station, ESPN, we'll call it, and you were nice enough to come out to the northern suburbs and do a show with us. I was the good-looking guy in the Kansas Jayhawks shirt, and you were the first guy I found in town that joined my island and talked about how good Jimmy Butler would be. And nobody else had him down as, like, a potentially wonderful player in the NBA, a top 15 player. What did you see in Jimmy Butler that you knew he was going to be that top flight and NBA stud?
Well, I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and tell you I thought he was going to be that good, but I knew he would be, you know, like an all-star caliber player. I mean, I think Jimmy Butler impacts winning, and I can't say that about a lot of guys in the NBA, but the biggest thing is his ability to defend, first of all. Like, when he came into the league, I saw him in consecutive nights, you know, guard LeBron, guard Dwayne Wade when they were with Miami, then guard Kevin Durant and guard Carmelo Anthony. Like, we had a stretch like that, and he did a fantastic job on all those guys. Like, not only did he belong out there, I mean, like, he was holding his own, and those guys were a little bit frustrated with him. And so I saw that, and I saw the work that he put in. I just knew that he was going to end up being, you know, when you can defend at a high level and you're a good athlete and you put in work, like, that's a formula for success. Now, it's probably more of a credit to you for figuring this thing out without seeing all this stuff that I saw in practice. But, you know, the whole public and figuring things out, it seems like they always are a little bit too late, or they overreact. Like, they see Summer League and they think, oh, this guy's going to be an all-star day based on Summer League. So, yeah, it's just I commend you for finding that about Jimmy, but I just think that he's such a great two-way player. I think those are rare nowadays.
Brian Scalabrine playing in the Big Three now. His team, the Ball Hogs. You can see him next Sunday, 23rd of July, at the UIC Pavilion, 2 o'clock tip-off. Four games throughout the afternoon, so just a lot of hoop for you basketball fans out there. Go check it out. I'm wondering your take here on whether the Warriors and the Cavs and that situation is good for the league, Scal, because I'm a huge NBA guy, and people are ripping on it's boring, it's just Golden State, and I remember the 80s when it was the Lakers and the Celtics, and I remember the 90s when the Bulls were up top the league. I don't think it's bad for the league that there's a Golden State Warriors team out there, even if they're just that good, along with LeBron playing in the finals every year. I don't think that's bad. What's your take?
Well, I don't think it's bad, but I've always been a proponent of, like, one player on each team should be a super max player. And I understand it's, like, very complicated, but you start, like, tiering, like, what LeBron could really make if he was on the open market. If you really think about it, if LeBron was a free agent and you could pay him whatever, you'd have, like, $130 million cap, right? And you could pay LeBron whatever. Like, what would he get paid? What would the highest bid go for? Would it be $80 million? Would it be $90 million?
More,
I don't know. I'm not sure what it would be. But until you have, like, one player that does that, that's the only way you're going to be able to separate these guys out. It's just reality. If you want to cap the superstars and make it so they can only make so much money, and then you have, like, other tier players making just the same amount as they do when they're not on the same level as them, then you're going to have super teams. So if you don't want super teams, then open up the salary cap to one player. I mean, it's just the natural business. Like, just think about how important it is to have LeBron at $33 million versus, and I don't want to get on my guy, I love Mike Conley, but Mike Conley at $33
million. Right.
Like, two guys making the exact same amount, like, how is that possible when they don't do or impact the game the same way? So until they fix that, we're going to have super teams, so I'm not complaining about it. So is it bad for the league? I don't think so. People love the finals, even though the Warriors destroyed the Cavs. They thought it was good.
I get where you're coming from, though, on how it's really not it's not fair to the super, superstars. People are complaining about Steph getting $40 million. If Steph's on the open market, he's getting more than that. 2017 Warriors, whatever Bulls team you want to pick, I personally would take 91 when Michael was young, but you could take the 96-72 win team, whatever you want to do. Who do you think wins?
So I did that a lot this year, but very difficult. I know I did. I thought it's really difficult to do eras, but I would say I would never bet against Jordan. So no matter, I think, here's what I believe. I think the game is at an all-time level as far as talent and skill. I don't think you can even argue that. You have seven-footers that can do crazy things and guys taking the ball off the bounce because the game has evolved from the 90s to now. We get that. But no matter what, like, whatever era Jordan's in, I'm never betting against Jordan. Like, his 6-0 is going to live in, like, we see how hard it is for LeBron to even get there. Even Steph Curry, and they were good last year, they had to sign Kevin Durant to create a dynasty. Jordan 6-0 will live on forever as, and he'll be the greatest athlete because of it.
Isaiah Thomas is such a wonderful player for the Boston Celtics, and he just appeared in the ESPN The Body issue. Is that something you would have liked to have done?
The ESPN Dad Bod?
Yeah.
Sweet. You know what? People would want to see that. They would be like, oh, he's just like you and me.
Hey, muffin tops for everyone.
What happens if, now you're making me think of the playoffs, what happens if Rondo doesn't get hurt, Scal? Does Boston still come back and win four in a row?
I don't know if they went four in a row, but Rondo was, you know, I will say this, in game two, what Rondo did was ungame plannable. You cannot game plan to stop that. His ability to find everybody on the court, no matter what you do, no matter how much film you watch, and I've been a part of a lot of playoff series and runs and trips to the finals, you could not game plan against that, what he did in that game two. So if he kept that same level up and the Bulls continue to play that way, I think it would have been a tough series for the Celtics. I think they would have won, but I don't think they would have won four games the way that they did.
Wrapping it up with Brian Scalabrine, Rondo, of course, today signs with New Orleans. Rumors that your former teammate D. Rose might be headed to the Milwaukee Bucks. Does D. Rose have something left in the tank?
He has something left to prove, but I thought he was on his way to getting like 12, 15 million bucks. Then he got hurt once again. I think longevity, I know for a fact that Minnesota was loved Derek, but then once he got hurt, it's like, man, if you're counting on a guy to play, it's tough. But I feel for Derek because I think he's such a great guy. And I know that you, like the Chicago media and him, they were kind of at ends with each other or whatever it may be. But I think Derek, to me, is a fantastic human being. But, I just hope that I just want him to play a whole year without getting injured. That's what I hope for him every year.
I've always been on Derek's side. I just want to make sure everybody knows that. I know that you don't know that, Scott, because we've never been on the show before. So I love Derek, and I hope it works out where he goes somewhere where he can win and be happy and all of that. Do you think the Timberwolves have had the best offseason of anyone? Tibbs has got something cooking up there right now.
Yeah, I think Jimmy's going to help them. Jeff Teague is a guy who's very durable. So I think that they got some good pieces. I love Zach LaVine. I really do. So I hope he does well. He's a Seattle kid, and I know he's now he's with the Bulls. But, I think Tibbs has this win-now mentality, and I'm commending a lot of people who are going for it now because even with the Warriors and how great they are, I like the GMs, like the Rockets, trying to do things to try to get over that juggernaut.
All right, so you're here next weekend at the UIC Pavilion for the Big Three Tournament. You will play the Ball Hogs are up against the Power. Not a big fan of the name the Power, but some very clever names in this league. You got the Threes Company, the Trilogy, the Tri-State, and my favorite, the Killer Threes.
Yeah, you guys got to come out and watch, man. Yeah, I mean, can you guys come out and watch? Where's the UIC Pavilion?
It's right downtown. We absolutely can come.
It's right by Little Italy.
Yeah, let's do this. So you guys got to come out and support and get out there and maybe we'll play a little one-on-one beforehand.
I would love to come. It's my dad's 91st birthday.
I don't want to hear it. I'm tired of hearing excuses, man.
My dad's 91st birthday. That's pretty good. It's not like.
Bring him to the game.
Go to breakfast. Have a dinner. The game's at 2:00. You got a great window. Scal, it's good. I think the Big Three is awesome. I love seeing you guys out there. I wish you nothing but success with it. You should have as much fun as you can possibly have getting to be back on the court. And you're always super entertaining, man. It's great to talk to you.
All right, thanks, guys. We'll talk later.
Brian Scalabrine, who used to play for the Bulls, and
yeah,
now still
he did.
Doing it. Love that guy.
He would go into a grocery store, and people would leave their carts and just follow Brian Scalabrine around the grocery store.
Why wouldn't you? It's a great activity. All right, quick timeout. We will talk some boxing coming up after 6:30. McGregor Mayweather.
It's not boxing.
Well, we can figure out what it is coming up in a moment. In a minute. Thank you. 720 WGN. That's it. Sin City indeed. August the 26th, and it will be arguably the greatest pound-for-pound boxer in the history of boxing, maybe, in Floyd Mayweather. I'm saying maybe because I'm not going to consider myself a boxing expert, but people do call him that. And Conor McGregor, who I can say for a fact, has never been in a professional boxing match in his life. But money talks, and these guys are going to both walk out of here insanely more rich people. Mike Dice is not that rich, but he knows everything about boxing and MMA and the UFC. And he joins us now from Fan Sided on 720 WGN at Mike DYCE on Twitter. Dice, what's up, my brother?
Not much. Thanks for having me on the show.
We appreciate you coming on. So the four-stop tour here across America over to London, and there's all this discussion on who won the hype, who won the talkathon. Does this matter what's going on right now? Because I don't even know if they need to sell tickets, right?
They probably don't need a whole lot of help selling tickets. I think it's definitely a sellable event and something that's piquing everybody's interest. This is obviously helping bring in some people who are on the fringe or not completely sold on the fight, just converting those people. I do think it's important to the fighters. I know that Conor McGregor makes the mental warfare aspect of combat sports a big tool of his game, and this is the opportunity to kind of inflict that to maybe try and get the opponent's head and get the advantage.
Hey, Mike, first of all, my wish for you is that the next time Carm brings you on the show, he says, the very rich Mike Dice.
I don't want to overstate it.
Yeah, I understand. Okay, now, I loved, you know, so many boxers, but this is not a boxing match. This is a sham. If this were MMA, McGregor would kill Mayweather. If this were a real boxing match, Mayweather would kill McGregor. All this stuff they're doing in the press conferences, this feels like, you know, World Wrestling Federation stuff, doesn't it?
It does feel like World Wrestling. I even tweeted something out, I think, when Conor McGregor showed up to the New York stop in a fur coat with no T-shirt on, that it had kind of made the full transition to WWE. And it's interesting that you bring up that correlation. You know, at one point in time, the UFC kind of piggybacked off the WWE to try and build their brand and bring in an audience. So there's obviously things about the WWE that's beneficial, especially when trying to sell pay-per-views and stuff. And I think that, you know, you're right. This is, you know, a boxer and an MMA fighter. It's a little bit more of a legitimate boxing bout, but I think it's still interest. I don't think you should watch this looking and hoping for a great example of boxing.
So as far as the questionable comments that McGregor has made here, what did he say? What was his exact terminology that I don't really want to say on WGN right now, but we got to get it out there? Is he insulted Floyd Mayweather? What was his words?
Well, when he said, "me boy," and I think there was a built-in excuse for McGregor when he said that. This is a guy who grew up in Ireland. While he's definitely understanding and understands race relations, not only the United States but the world, I don't think that he could understand something intricate as the word "boy," something that's used in slang or Ireland.
And hold on one second. Let me put Dice on hold because he's breaking up. "Dance for me, boy," is what Floyd Mayweather said. "Dance for," not Floyd Mayweather, Conor McGregor said. So you got a white guy in McGregor saying "dance for me, boy" to an African-American in Floyd Mayweather. It's just,
I could see where that would be taken the wrong way.
I would say that that's not exactly something that I would think boxing, MMA, the UFC would want any of that. But the other side of it is, it's all about the hype, right? Oh, my God, he's using basically racial slurs to gain attention. It's a little rough.
Don't you agree, Carm? Usually, like, you know, when two fighters have a press conference, you know, they don't say a word. They just stand at each other and they stare down. And this is just like, I believe this is choreographed what's going to happen.
Well, let's see. Let's try Dice one more time, see if he's got a better sell here. "Dance for me, boy." Do you think this is choreographed, Mike?
You know, there's a lot of accusations about that, and I don't know that there's any kind of choreography going between the two of them, but I definitely think that they've choreographed the things that they're going to say and the things they're going to do. They both kind of had their own stunts. Floyd Mayweather bringing out the money to throw up in the air, and some of the things that Conor's done. I think there's some choreography going on, but I don't necessarily think there's as much collaboration between the two of them as some people think.
Mike Dice, this is a $100 cost to get the pay-per-view, $100. I remember, like, my wife getting upset with me that I was spending $60 on a Tyson fight. Okay, so is this worth $100 for boxing fans or for fans of entertainment, or is it just not worth the bread?
You know, I don't think it's worth it for anybody. You're seeing that this pay-per-view model is kind of going away. The UFC is coming off a great year. Conor McGregor was a big part of that, so there's some credence to that. But you've seen it in, like, the WWE. They've almost abandoned the pay-per-view model to go to this streaming model. You know, you used to have to pay $60 to get a WWE pay-per-view, but now you pay $10 and you get two pay-per-views a month for that price. And if it's the WWE is noticing that trend, there's got to be some credence to it, and I think it's only a matter of time before it follows suit. I think $100 is too much.
So hold on a second. What do you think the future looks like then? If they're going to get rid of pay-per-view, everybody's going to be watching these fights on their computer?
I don't think they're going to get rid of pay-per-view, but I think it's something that's showing that it's a trend that's going to go away. I think more people are willing to watch it in a communal situation, you know, with friends.
Netflix, Hulu.
Interesting.
Yeah. You know, there's been talks about different things exploring it. The UFC has their own Fight Pass, which is similar to the WWE Network, where people are already paying $10 a month to get access to content, and they already stream events on UFC Fight Pass. So it could be the future.
13 times more money, more bets, actually. 30 times more bets are on Conor McGregor. More people are trying to hit the plus 525, throw, you know, whatever, $50 on there and get the big hit. The money, 89% of it, is on Floyd Mayweather. But people are taking a shot with Conor. What's your advice to the gambling public here, Mike?
You know, if you have money to throw away, I can understand the desire to try and put a little bit of money on Conor McGregor. I think if a safe bet, you know, is Floyd, but I don't think it's necessarily appealing from a gambler's perspective. The last I saw, the money line was like $500-$600, which means you have to bet $500 or $600 just to win $100, and that just doesn't seem worthwhile at all.
Yeah, what I've seen here is -$750. That's $750 to win $100. It's you know, you're spending a pretty penny to get there. Can Conor McGregor win this fight? Thank you.
I think he can. You know, there's the puncher's chance, and that's definitely what he's going for. As unrealistic as it may be, there's a chance. You know, Dana White's been very adamant, pointing out that Joe Horn, a school teacher, just beat Manny Pacquiao. It's a little different. Joe Horn trained specifically to box, but there's always a chance.
All right. What does that do for boxing if Conor McGregor somehow, some way beats Floyd Mayweather, who's never lost a bout in his life?
I don't know that it necessarily hurts boxing. I think there's a lot of built-in excuses. Mayweather's inactivity, McGregor's youth, the kind of uncertainty of the whole thing. But I think the important thing to remember is that there's a legitimate boxing match coming a couple weeks after that when Canelo Alvarez faces Golovkin, you know, September 15th. I think this is the date. That's a boxing match that the world's been dying to see. And I think that's the fight that boxing fans will want to tune in and watch. And I think it could wash out what could be a very lackluster McGregor-Mayweather fight out of the memory.
What's next? What if they go the other way? What if, like, Mayweather takes on, like, an NHL guy who gets into a lot of fights next? It's a slippery slope. Slippery slope, Mike.
It is a slippery slope. I think it's a little – that's even more far-fetched than this McGregor thing. I didn't think this McGregor fight would ever come to fruition. But, you know, crazier things have happened. We've seen Mayweather already make a crossover appearance in the WWE fighting the Big Show. This guy is like 7 foot tall and 450 pounds or something.
His name is the Big Show?
That's the wrestler's name. And they had a feud, I think it was back in 2008.
He's not related to the Huge Show, Harry, if that's where you were going.
No,
he actually dropped down to his knees so that Floyd could punch him in the face.
Wow. That's aggressive. What happened to Ronda Rousey, by the way, slightly off topic? Because she was the thing for the UFC. Everybody was loving her, and then she's just disappeared.
She was really good. She had a really great skill set in one area, which was judo. Sure, her stand-up game never quite developed, and I think that the sports just caught up to her. She was good at one thing, and everybody's figured out. And you have a new crop of young women coming up who are more diverse. They've trained in jiu-jitsu. They've trained in boxing and Muay Thai, and they have an arsenal of weapons. And I think that's ultimately the demise of Ronda Rousey. You talk about Mayweather-McGregor. Holly Holm, the woman who beat Ronda Rousey, albeit with a head kick, she was a boxer before making a transition to MMA, if you want to look to that, to any kind of clues. Of course, Ronda Rousey is more known for her ground game than her stand-up like McGregor. But, you know, she's coming off of two losses, and she's kind of taken her, you know, her personal life and ran with it and kind of embraced it. If I was advising Ronda Rousey, I would tell her to go to the WWE. I know this has been a big talking point for this conversation, but she's a huge fan of the WWE. She's made an appearance at WrestleMania and got a huge reception. She loves it. I think she would be a good part of it. She's actually appeared at a WWE event this week, albeit to support another friend who was competing. But there's a natural marriage there between the WWE and Ronda Rousey.
Last one here for you, Mike Dice. Is the UFC, is MMA going to pass boxing? Has it passed boxing? What's your take on that side?
I think it has. I think the boxing, it's hard to understand. There's all these different organizations, weight classes, fighters. It's much more hard. It's hard to follow. What the UFC's done is they made it easy for you to be a fan. and they control the product. They control their press conferences. There's a routine that's established. And I think it's just more appealing to a younger audience that doesn't see boxing. That's interesting. Boxing, the promoters all have to promote their guys separately, whereas the UFC can kind of build up people in every weight class and tell a story. And I think that's allowed them to kind of establish stars and introduce them to the fans in such a way. You see people like Sage Northcutt, who burst on the scene out of nowhere in Houston. He was a student at Texas A&M, and now he's this huge fighter in MMA. You've seen it with Conor McGregor. He came up, kid from Ireland, and in a couple of years, he's fighting Floyd Mayweather.
It's pretty amazing. Really incredible. I mean, I remember when the UFC started, I'm like, what is this? This is so weird. And now it's making tons and tons and tons of dough, and it's got people like yourself going around the world covering it.
Mike, what's more amazing, though, that McGregor from MMA is fighting Floyd Money Mayweather, or that Mark Cartman and his girlfriend both fell asleep during the Cubs game last night and had them almost blow an 8-0 lead?
Oh, man. I know how much Carm loves the Cubs, so I'm really surprised to hear that he fell asleep during the game. I've left Cubs games earlier and received a verbal lashing from Carm, so I'm kind of surprised to hear that he fell asleep.
Well, it was, you know, I was working so hard yesterday in the office, Dice, trying to, you know, raise TVs for you and do all sorts of stuff. It was, you know, it was late on the night on Friday. I got a little tired, so I'm blaming you. Dice, you're the best. Check him out on Twitter at Mike Dice, and check him out at fansided.com and his pod. He also hosts Extra Rounds, which you can check out with him and his buddy Elias, who do a great job talking more MMA, UFC. All you need, Harry Tynum.
I like the name. Very clever title.
It is clever indeed. Dice, you're the best. Thanks, brother.
Thanks, guys.
At Mike Dice.
I kept thinking Mike Dice was great. I kept thinking you were saying Mike Tice.
Not Mike Tice. Great offensive line coach back in the...
Right. One-time Bears offensive coordinator.
Yeah, for a minute. All right. Hey, Amy Guth is coming up next. We have a special intro for her, and we have a million things that we didn't get to, including what turns men on, which is very interesting. Harry brought it.
We'll get Amy's reaction. See if it turns her on.
Okay. We'll find out. 720 WGN. Saturday night special, Amy Guth coming up. You following what's going on with Lonzo Ball this week, Harry Tynowitz?
I saw him and his dad on Jimmy Kimmel, who I love, by the way. And Lonzo Ball was great. And Lonzo Ball's dad, I got like kind of a new appreciation for. I don't think he's like as bad as Marinovich's dad.
Well, I felt some significant empathy for the family when his Lonzo Ball's mom, LeVar Ball's wife, shows up at one of their games and she's, about 4 months out from having a stroke, and she's, you know, walking through the crowd very gingerly, and it's like, oh, there's real life hitting you in the face. It's not just this loud guy trying to pump up his kid and sell shoes, but that's actually real life in the family. He's also throwing up triple-doubles in the summer league like a madman. He did back-to-back summer league triple-doubles, which had not been done before in summer league history, so Lonzo Ball might actually be able to play.
And when he switched shoes, LeBron made sure to point out that Lonzo Ball was wearing Nike shoes instead of Big Baller brand.
I think that's worth pointing out. If these shoes are so great, $495.
$500 for a pair of shoes.
Why would he go Nike?
From a rookie.
Did Lonzo respond?
Lonzo responded in the game. Mm-hmm. He's very, you know, like I said, he's very likable, surprisingly likable, because Todd Marinovich, going back, 25 years, was this guy who's, I assume most of you guys know who Todd Marinovich was. His dad played offensive line in the NFL, only dated athletes, wanted his son to be a quarterback, and the son never had fast food, and he became a USC star and then quarterback for the Raiders, and then he, flipped out on pot. And the joke was Todd Marinovich. But, you know, his dad was like...
It was worse than that.
Yeah. But, I mean, his dad was like this, mad scientist. Whereas Lonzo Ball's dad, LeVar Ball, just seems to me to be a guy wanting to, capitalize on his son's success. He's proud of all three of his sons.
Yeah, I get super uncomfortable by his dad, but at times, I will admit to have been entertained.
The dad says that Lonzo's two brothers could be better players than him.
We'll see.
He also says he could beat Mike Jordan.
Yeah.
Beat Michael Jordan.
No one has said more things than LeVar Ball. The guy makes me, in general, he makes me nauseous, but once in a blue moon, I'm entertained. All right, hey, Amy Guth coming right up. We got one more quick timeout for you. 720 WGN.